back for another episode of the Half Court Press. I'm John Niatawa, joined by Chris Hetty. Chris.
John.
It has been I don't know, what is the right word to describe 2019 for the basketball programs that we cover? Nebraska's 2-9 and Creighton is 3-7 since the calendar flipped to 2019. Dreary?
And I think UNO isn't...
They're doing pretty well. Yeah, they're second in their league, but the Summit League...
Everyone kind of loses to everyone in the Summit.
Well, I just kind of feel like it doesn't start until conference tournament
time. That's true. Yeah,
it's a one-bid league. You're not getting in. The season starts when the conference tournament begins. So
tumultuous
eye on... UNO, by the way, does have South Dakota State at home this week. And so that'll be a fun game.
Boone gets to go to probably the best game in Nebraska this week.
Probably. I would say that. In the state of Nebraska. And maybe the best game this month.
Maybe we should have him on here.
We might need to. No, that's what I'm saying. Maybe
we should probably have
leading
him on
up
here.
To the Summit League tournament.
Yeah. Yeah, we actually we should definitely have him on.
Presuming that Omaha maintains its standing. I think it's in second place right now.
But like, can you imagine in November being like, hey, on February 11th, we're gonna be really needing Tony Boone to come talk about the best basketball program in the
state. Right. Yeah. It feels like I just watched the movie Rogue One again.
What'd you think?
And yeah, I do. But it kind of feels like I was watching them thinking about Nebraska and Creighton basketball. It feels like if that movie would have ended without them giving the Death Star plans to the Alliance. You know, it's like everyone dies
and they don't get
that's what it feels like we're trending right now, which is very disappointing.
So they do they even get into the library?
Yeah, they get there. They get the thing.
They're on the podium or whatever.
Right.
But then they just can't actually...
They can't send it.
Yeah.
They don't break down that shield or whatever, and they never get it sent.
Yeah, see, that might be for Creighton. I think for Nebraska, it's the... Whatever planet that was on, Nebraska crash landed.
Oh.
And it was like a video game. They got to level 4, and level 7 is the... So they just
video game analogy. It feels like, you know, sometimes when you're playing, you know, NBA 2K or maybe you're playing Madden or something, and you set the setting on easiest, and then you just beat the computer really bad.
Yeah.
Like Nebraska and Creighton feel like the computer in this scenario.
Yeah.
They just keep getting beat, and they can't find a way to overcome the player who's just being a jerk and the human player that's being a jerk and just winning these games.
It's like playing against Michael Vick in Madden 2004.
Yeah. It's been tough, man.
Yeah. Let's talk Creighton first.
We will, because there's still hope. There's still hope for Nebraska, too, but it just seems like there's always hope because of the conference tournaments. That's always part of it, and you're always playing games, and Creighton can still cling to that. I think the question for Creighton is are we going to see tangible progress?
Mm-hmm.
I think you can make an argument after watching the Jays play Seton Hall and Villanova that some strides are being made. Greg McDermott made the case, I think it was after Seton Hall on his radio show, that 6 weeks ago, if Creighton would have been in a game where offensively it didn't perform well, it didn't shoot well, which was the case against Villanova and Seton Hall, it just, part of that was by design. Creighton slowed down its pace and bogged down the game, but also it wasn't very efficient offensively. And this has been a team that has really been boosted by its ability to score and hit shots. And that's kind of where it's been the source of its energy, at least for a good portion of the season. And to have two games, Villanova and Seton Hall, where it wasn't there and they couldn't rely on that offense as consistently as they have in the past, but to still be in the game to Greg McDermott was a sign of progress.
Sure.
And I can buy into that. But I do think that for this group, I think there needs to be more. I think there needs to be that clear sort of 2 week or three week stretch where you look at it and say, they got better. Because I think I think you can make the argument too that yes, Creighton made some progress defensively and found a way to get itself into those games against Villanova and Seton Hall, but still some of the same problems that have existed at times. They did struggle to get stops, especially against Seton Hall late. The fact that I feel like their offense maybe lacked some versatility down the stretch. They weren't able to get the ball inside to Martin Crumple. The three wasn't falling, and then it was just kind of like, uh-oh, now what? We don't know what to do. Not having that go-to guy make step up and make plays. Villanova had Phil Booth. Seton Hall had had Miles Powell. Like, those are things that we've talked about throughout the course of the season. So I think you can go both ways with it. And I guess for the Jays, I feel like they are a young team in the grand scheme of things. Now, this group has gained a lot of experience over the course of the season, but it's a group of a lot of freshmen and sophomores who are going to be around for a while, and they have ambitions of doing some great things during their careers. I think you need to see some really tangible progress.
Yeah, it's funny because I feel like with this Creighton team, you can look at it, you can convince yourself of two things: that they're so close, they're almost there, like they're in it at overtime, Villanova, and they were even down a couple guys. Like, you can convince yourself, like, man, they're so close. But then you can also convince yourself of, like, man, these things keep happening, and they can't fix them.
Yeah, it's almost like there's a reason why they're close, but they're not getting over the hump.
And it almost,
and even though the reasons might be different in the small, like from a game to game thing,
yeah,
the larger big picture is like there's reasons why there's reasons. Like,
right. I almost wonder now too, and this is like a little bit too big picture to kind of write about or talk about really, but it almost feels like this is the season that next year you'll point back to and be like, well, we saw this coming. We saw this, you know, 12-0 beginning to a season coming because look how close they were last year, and they need to do this and that, and they've done the, you know what I mean? Like, it almost feels like this is the year that you build into the next year. Because I think maybe it was Dirk or somebody else, but they were like, I can imagine next year this Creighton team's really going to be good, you know? And so that's kind of hard to think about it when you're a player, or even write about, because
you're like, I want to win this game. Yeah. Why can't we win this game? You know, that I agree with you, though. I think there's this idea, and this is what the players have bought in, and Coach McDermott was kind of preaching at the start of the year, is that young core, a lot of guys who are in different roles, let's mesh and grow as a team. And inevitably, where we are today in November is not going to be where we are. We're not going to be at our potential for a while. Mm-hmm. Like, today, we're not at our potential in the preseason or whatever. They all kind of bought into that idea. We're not there, but we can get there. I think maybe the frustrating thing for fans who've watched, and probably for the players as well, is that it's maybe taken longer to get to that, whatever arbitrary sort of level that is, the peak for this group, or the potential for this group to get to that level. It's been a harder road than maybe was envisioned, or at least certainly after Creighton went and beat Clemson and beat Montana right after that, and competed with Gonzaga for 30 minutes. Like, it seemed that, well, maybe perhaps that journey, that path where you're going to experience some ups and downs and go through some growing pains, maybe it wasn't going to be as treacherous as you thought it might have been. And then, but now in now we're here in February, and it turns out, well, yeah, it is. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and this is, you know, what's super interesting to me is Creighton is 13-11. Nebraska is 13-11.
Right.
Nebraska is 36th in KenPom, and Creighton is 50th in KenPom. But if you could pick a season, you pick Creighton's right now over Nebraska's, no doubt, right?
Is that because...
Isn't that interesting?
But is that because Creighton has Mitch Ballack, Tyshawn Alexander are sophomores, and Marcus Zagorowski is a freshman, and Martin Crumple, Davion Mintz are both juniors. Like, everyone from Creighton is coming back, aside from two seniors who are 7th and 8th off the bench when the roster's healthy.
Yeah, and there's
the difference?
Maybe, I don't know, but just if you think about it on a surface level of just this season, right? Where you've got two 13-11 teams, and one of them was supposed to be very good, the other one pretty good, and they both end up at 13-11 on February 11th.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so interesting the way that we think about the two teams in general, where Nebraska, we were, it's Titanic, it's halfway down. And Creighton is a tugboat, kind of a ways away. They're not going anywhere anytime soon, but they're in a boat, right?
In danger of maybe hitting an iceberg
maybe,
as well.
Maybe they hit an iceberg. Yeah. I feel like there are
some Creighton fans who probably feel the same way that Nebraska fans feel about the team. Even though they knew that this year would have some issues, I think that the team could possibly have some growing pains to go through. But I think in their mind, Creighton, because it has been so close in some of these games, like it's sort of serves as a sign that that ultimately it's not trending in the best in the best way. Like if we're going with that Titanic analogy, it's not navigating itself in the right way to get away from danger. It's still going to be maneuvering around icebergs, even though you know, they're still afloat.
Right. I think the other thing, the other reason why I think I look at the 13 and 11 differently too is, okay, so you've got Xavier, Seton Hall, DePaul, and Georgetown. Those are your next four games. And like, KenPom has them winning those games.
Yeah.
And like, I can convince myself that they are going to win those games. And so I think the biggest difference for me, at least, and I'm curious kind of what you think too, is like, I still look at this Creighton team and think like, I could see them winning the Big East tournament. I feel like they still have that in them. Am I wrong to kind of think that, hopefully, or
I think based on what we've seen to this point, I would say I wouldn't make that prediction that they could do it. But then again, I think you can also make that argument that they haven't yet reached their peak yet.
Sure, yeah.
And so maybe this next stretch, they prove that they actually are capable of it. Like you said, not only the next four games is it more favorable, it's really the final seven.
Yeah, yeah, you're
they
right.
could easily finish 6-1 during this stretch. Xavier and at DePaul are probably the two swing games, I think. But you get Georgetown and Providence, two teams they've already beat on the road. Those teams come to Omaha. They have DePaul at home. They got to go to Marquette. That's obviously a really tough game. But Seton Hall comes here to Omaha. They just obviously went down to the wire with Seton Hall. I mean, it's pretty easy to make a case that Creighton can finish 5-2 or 6-1.
Oh, yeah.
And if they do that, then suddenly, yeah, the idea of what this team is capable of becomes a little bit different. I think it's hard for me to sort of jump on board with the notion or the thought that Creighton could win three games in a row in New York City, given what we have just seen,
sure,
where they weren't able to quite, they didn't play at their best necessarily, and they weren't at full strength, but they still had the game. Like, they're up 3 with 4 minutes left at Villanova, and they're up 6 with 4 minutes left at Seton Hall, and still lost those games.
Yeah, that's just true. That's true.
And they haven't had a stretch yet where they've played, in Big East play at least, where they've played three games in a row at that top level that you kind of need.
Mm-hmm.
But again, they have the time to sort of prove it. And so I think that to me is the big thing for this team is this. Now is the time. They've kind of preached all year, hey, we're going to peak in February and we're going to be our best in February. And injuries have maybe hampered that idea, that goal a little bit, but still, this is an opportunity for them to really finish strong and springboard themselves into the postseason and into next year. And whether they happen to have a lot of good fortune and catch some breaks and find themselves on the NCAA bubble on Selection Sunday, maybe they don't. But at the very least, I think they need to show some hard evidence. Hey, this is what this season was about,
to get
to this moment. To improve and progress as a team, and to show you that, like, we got a chance to be really good over the next
year. Where are they health-wise right now?
Tyson Alexander had the knee, but he returned to play. I don't think he was 100% against Seton Hall, so keep an eye on him. Damian Jefferson is...
He's going to return soon, right?
He returned, but he was limited. I mean, he played single-digit minutes against Villanova and Seton Hall, and I don't think maybe showed the kind of progress they were hoping. He returned earlier than expected.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was like the 3-week mark from ankle surgery, but he's still getting back. Connor Cashaw still has pain in his arm, left shoulder. And so he missed the St. John's, or he missed the Xavier game, came back for Villanova and Seton Hall, but still was playing through pain. And then Marcus Zagorowski is got the hand injury, and he'll be out most likely for Xavier. He's going to be reevaluated this week, so I guess stay tuned. I think the initial thought from Greg McDermott was that he'd be doubtful for Xavier, and then maybe could return for Seton Hall. But again, is he going to be 100%? He broke a bone in his hand,
right?
Sure, he can put a cast on it or wrap it up, but how does that affect his shot or his dribble or his confidence? I don't know.
Yeah.
So you got a lot of guys who aren't 100% Even Mitch Balick, has a shoulder issue that he's dealing with. He's been able to play through it. He broke his nose at one point.
Mm-hmm.
They've had a lot of odd sort of bangs and bruises and different ailments, but a lot of other teams have too. And so I think that's kind of part of it. It is really sort of a challenge for this group not to let the injuries, not to let yourself sort of make a human nature excuse because of injuries, because of the setbacks, the losses, the close calls, and to really fight and put yourself in a position to finish strong. I think mm-hmm. it'll be an interesting sort of assessment to make after the season or after these seven games unfold mm-hmm. as to where this team is at mentally and how much improvement on the court we saw.
It's interesting because it's February 11th, and it seems like Creighton has plenty of time left, right, to kind of go on this run or make it not as, you know, make the season worth something, right, that you can maybe accomplish something.
Mm-hmm.
Feels like time's kind of up for Nebraska, don't you think? Doesn't it feel different? Doesn't February 11th feel so much differently for Nebraska? Is that just me because I'm around it, or what's...
No, I agree with you. I think it does.
And I think part of it is...
And honestly, it kind of feels like it. So, whereas there's obviously people who follow Creighton and they've made the determination that this team can't reach it. If Creighton said at the start of the year, the players are like, hey, we want to make the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are fans who maybe 2 weeks ago or even analysts, people following the program said, well, they're not going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Now that sentiment, I don't think had filtered into the locker room. I don't think that those players mm-hmm. thought that.
Yeah.
They still thought, and I believe they still think that mm-hmm. they can get where they want to get.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can tell me better, but it doesn't feel like the way that Nebraska's played the last two games.
Yeah.
In particular, that the players feel that what they set out to do is still attainable, and like reality is sort of like crashing down on them. And
I think the first 21 minutes of Purdue, they really thought they had it. And then Purdue remembers their Purdue, goes on this 14-2 run. And then I think that this Nebraska team can convince themselves that, you know, they can win this game, they can be in it, they can be mentally tough. But the first time, like, I think they can go into a game thinking that.
Mm-hmm.
But the first time things get hard, it falls apart. And I think we saw that against Maryland, you know, when Bruno Fernando, you know, trucks over Tanner Borchardt, and Tim gets a technical, and his thinking is, I'm going to get a technical and get these guys fired up, get them excited, get them pissed off, get them ready to go. And instead, I think the team reaction was, man, that's crap. That sucks. And two plays later, when the whole crowd is still booing, reminding the guys of the play, they're like, man, that sucks.
Yeah.
And Maryland is just another three, another two, kind of going on this run. And Nebraska's like, man, Tanner got stepped on. That was mean of Bruno. Bad Bruno. And meanwhile, they're, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think we saw that against Purdue, too. I mean, they finished the second half. They did not make a field goal for the final 5 minutes and 23 seconds of the second half, and we're within two of a really good Purdue team, right?
Of the first half, you mean?
Of the first half, excuse me. And and it was 33-31 at halftime.
Yeah.
And then they come out, and Roby has this great dunk, and it's tied, 33-33. And I think in their minds, they're like, yes, this is it. We're going to go on. This is going to be great. And then they hit a three. Tim Miles is waiting for a media timeout. They don't call it. Incredibly well officiated game, by the way.
Was it really?
It was great.
I was unable to
They
watch.
Let him play.
Okay.
John, you wouldn't even believe. I mean, it was great. But because of that, and Tim probably should have known this, because of that, he was just waiting for a call, waiting for anything, for a whistle to go to the media timeout.
Yeah.
He didn't want to burn a timeout. But because that they were calling it the way they were, waiting for a whistle was probably not the smartest idea, because I think, I mean, they played from the 16:30 mark to like the 14:30 mark. And they would only stop at 14:30 because Tim called a timeout. Was like, all right, we got to stop this.
And Purdue had foot on the gas
pedal
going.
Yeah. Like, couldn't even get like a turnover, knocked out of bounds. It was high level basketball. But after that happened, they came out and Nebraska played okay in the final, you know, 14 minutes, but they didn't gain any ground. And Purdue, like, Nebraska made, I think, five shots in a row at one point, which is like incredible for them considering they just shot 21% against Maryland. But Purdue made 9 of 10. And, like, it was just, they were just playing so well. And so, you know, things get hard and they don't respond. Yeah. And that's kind of the way it is right now.
Which
so,
isn't it weird? I don't know, because at the start of the season, I felt like they did that.
That was their thing, yeah. I mean, Seton Hall, things got really hard. There was really bad call, and they took, like, 17 minutes to go over a call. And they rallied from that and beat Seton Hall by, like, 20.
They didn't necessarily respond well in game against Texas Tech or Minnesota, but they responded well the next game.
Right.
They went to Clemson one.
Went to snap
Creighton around after Minnesota, and then the Oklahoma State game they responded well in that game.
Yeah, exactly. So they responded well. Yeah.
So it's just did they just take too many hits? Did this group just take too many hits?
I think the ball started rolling, and they started thinking about, when you started thinking about how you're failing and not thinking about how to succeed, then it becomes extremely hard to succeed, you know? And so I think that, you know, I mentioned it, I think, in a podcast or on the radio or something, but I was sitting on the floor before the Maryland and Nebraska game, and I was talking to somebody.
This was the game a week and a half ago.
Yeah. And because we can sit and we can watch the opponents warm up, and I'm big on that for football and for basketball. And I'm watching Bruno Fernando warm up. Dude's sweating. Dude is like working. Like it looks like that's all he's doing today is like this warm up. And you look over and you look at Nebraska, and they're doing like dribbling drills, like going back and forth and just kind of going through, like bouncing it pretty high, going between the legs, not really trying to do much, trying to whatever. And like Bruno Fernando doesn't play 39 minutes like James Palmer or Thomas Allen or Roby or all those guys. So he can probably work out a little harder before the game. But at the same time, when you just watched Maryland overall, how ready they were and how much they wanted to be there, and you looked at Nebraska, it was almost like a college team and a high school team, where a high school team is like ready, they're kind of just there, but they're kind of looking around, looking for the girlfriend, like looking for the parents. And I'm not saying Nebraska was doing that, but like just wasn't as serious.
You could tell that there was just a little bit of a difference in the level of focus.
Maryland showed up knowing they were going to win. Nebraska really hoped they would.
Yeah,
you know. And so I think that it's just, and at the same time, like, okay, say that you have to write 6 stories in a week, and the 6 stories you write are just garbage. They're just bad, and you feel bad about it, and your editors are telling you, you know, hey, that's okay, stay positive. Right. And all your readers are like, you should be fired. Like, you're so bad at writing.
Yeah.
And you're about to sit down to the computer and write your 7th story. You're not thinking like, oh, I'm going to crush this. You're thinking like, yikes, I don't want to do what I just did 6 times in a row. So, like, you can see why the players and the coaches feel that way, because, like, if you do something bad enough times in a row, you feel bad. But it's just the point now where, like, you know, we've been writing and talking about Nebraska needs something positive to happen. We've been saying that phrase, and coaches and players have been saying that phrase for like almost a month now. And like, when nothing good happens for a month, like, that's gonna take a toll.
Yeah.
And so,
and the league is just not,
the league is getting better.
Yeah, it's not like teams like Illinois and Rutgers and Northwestern have taken on a lot of losses, but they don't make it easy, you know.
No.
And they've proven, Illinois beat Minnesota and beat Michigan State, and Rutgers beat Maryland. No, Illinois beat Maryland and Minnesota and Michigan State.
Yeah.
Rutgers beat Indiana, Ohio State. But they've basically been capable, is what I'm saying. And instead of, like, in the ACC, you've got Wake Forest at the bottom, who teams can beat up on, and maybe a Georgia Tech. Like, it doesn't seem that the Big Ten has that type of team or teams has emerged, which has made it tough on a team like Nebraska that's been stuck in a funk and can't get itself out.
And like, okay,
because like everyone's looking at Nebraska as like red meat.
Whereas,
and if you had the opportunity to play another team that was also reeling.
There's no other team, Penn State,
I guess they've lost a lot.
Yeah, but Penn State's no joke, man. Like,
they almost beat Purdue the other day.
Nebraska's got to go to Penn State, and Penn State's weird, man. Because like, Pat Chambers is I think he's a good coach, and I think he gets his guys to play. And playing at Penn State's just weird anyway.
Well, and the metrics are really high on Penn State, aren't they? Like top 70 in KenPom or something, you know?
Yeah, they're 62.
They haven't won a game in the Big Ten, right? Penn State,
I think they've won one. I think they beat Northwestern.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's right. But so they won one game 62. And they're still 62.
That says everything. But so here's the thing: if you're a Nebraska fan, right, and you're it's at. Minnesota, Northwestern, Penn State coming up. Okay, Minnesota, I believe, yeah, they've lost three in a row. Okay, Northwestern, they've lost three in a row, and Penn State has one win in the Big Ten. So if there was ever going to be a time when Nebraska was going to kind of go on a run and save some face, it's now, right? But
it's hard to, like, man, confidently predict
it
that.
It is so hard to, it's hard to just say, yeah, I think Nebraska can beat Minnesota. That's a hard thing to say, because last time Nebraska played Minnesota, Amir Coffey had 32, and Nebraska had Isaac Copeland. And I think that the first 20 minutes of the Purdue game, after the game, Tim Miles said, there are a lot of positive things we can take from this and blah, blah, blah. And that's a very, like, Mike Riley just losing to Ohio State by 60 of, like, there are some positive things we can take from this. Like, very, like, you know, service level. But to Tim's point, I think for the first 20 minutes, they realized they don't need Isaac Copeland to play aesthetically pleasing and okay basketball, right? And so if you don't have to play aesthetically pleasing and great basketball to beat, you know, to play close to Purdue, then you can probably do that and play close with Minnesota, Northwestern, and Penn State, right? And so maybe they're figuring that out. The problem, though, is they've lost, what, seven in a row now?
Yeah.
And you still have a team that Miles has said is mentally weak, and they're low confidence, and they're still losing. And when you can keep losing, sometimes it's hard to see the positives. So
yeah, like,
do they actually believe that, you know, like, yeah, can they actually move on and see, oh, yeah, I mean, we played them close. I mean, they're just Division I players. They're probably, like, pissed. They're probably like, we should have beat Purdue. What the heck were we doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, like, how do you balance that of, like, okay,
yeah, it's
be positive?
Odd because they are inherently confident. You don't get to this level without some sort of edge and a little bit of cockiness to you.
Mm.
But I guess there's probably only so much the psyche can take. I mean,
yeah,
maybe the other teams you're playing are the same way. Like, they're Division I players too.
It's like, it's Captain America without his shield, right? Like, he can't do everything that he usually does, and he has to adapt a little bit. But he still thinks he can do stuff, you know?
Yeah.
The problem is that it's Captain America without a shield and without a uniform and, like, in the forest, like, cutting down trees, where, like, he's not using any of his superpowers, just kind of there, you know? So, I don't know, man. Like, it's just so different with everything revolving Tim and everything revolving Bill Moose and, like, all these elephants in the room. And, you know, see, we're to the point now where, like, we don't even talk about Miles anymore. You know, like, we don't.
Yeah,
and
it almost seems like an inevitability.
And it's to the point where, and, like, I don't know what's going to happen. I try not to talk about it because it's, you know, it's, I'm a reporter and, you know, whatever happens, happens. But
right,
it is notable.
A decision's not going to be made until the end of the season.
Right.
I mean,
at least that's what
we've
been told.
Right.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that. So,
not what we've been told. Not, I don't want people to take that the wrong way. Bill Moose has said he's not going to do it. That's the last time he's talked about it. He said he's not going to, quote unquote, disrupt the season, which is what he also said for Mike Riley. Mm. So we can safely assume that that's going to happen. Now, who knows if he's going to, you know, whatever. But
I think it would take some, like, really...
Right. Losing 14 in a row.
Yeah. Unforeseen sort of circumstance.
Yeah. And so it's just interesting to me now, too, where it's like any shred of good thing, it's, you know, it's Twitter and it's Nebraska fans, but any shred of anything good that happens in the basketball world for Nebraska is immediately met with, like, doesn't matter.
I saw a tweet of yours, and then your mentions filled up with, like, Chris, stop doing it. And I can't remember what tweeted about.
It was Nebraska's, like, it was their team sheet. So where they were and, like,
in the metrics,
and like Ken Pom, and it was like, just stop.
Yeah,
it.
The Nebraska
just
basketball fans are like,
off.
No, we're done.
I can't, and, like, I think,
but they will
are.
Show up, you know, like, I don't know. Do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think they'll be there on on Wednesday. They'll be a little less than usual. They'll be angrier than usual. The Maryland game, I talked about it on the Pick Six podcast, but the Maryland game, it was notable of, like, before the game, you know, they're doing the starting lineups, like, video, hype video. It's dead silent in the arena.
Yeah.
Dead silent. People were there. I don't think a lot of people in the arena thought they were going to win. And that's a weird vibe, right? And so, it's like, you know, this is their NET, this is their team sheet, doesn't matter. I can't tell you how many times, half jokingly, but maybe somewhat jokingly, that people have tweeted at me or to each other of, like, drop the basketball program, let's be a hockey team. Yeah. Bring in the hockey, and then we'll play a PBA.
I mean,
Big Ten has a hockey league.
Look, I don't think Nebraska should drop the basketball program,
they
obviously.
Won't. They're the second, obviously. Yeah, second highest revenue
sport. But it is really hard. I don't know if we've ever looked at just the difficulty that faced Nebraska in terms of taking its program, which had not accomplished anything basketball-wise, into the Big Ten mm-hmm. with all of these other tradition-rich, high expectation, you know, basketball ravished fan bases. I mean, like these.
You and could not go, that the Big 12 was nothing, but it's a little different because the Big 10's got more money and it's just more like.
It felt different. Yeah. I don't know.
I agree.
It's hard to climb mm-hmm. in this league mm-hmm. because. You know, if you're say Nebraska is 11th or whatever in the standings, what do you have to do to? I mean, number 10 is what, like Iowa?
Yeah, I mean, here's the
I
thing.
I mean, or you yeah. jump. You're trying to jump Illinois, which Illinois play for a national is only like 10 years away from or 15 years away from playing for a national championship.
Yeah,
had a perfect season until like the final day of the regular season. I mean. Every single program seems to have, at some point, accomplished something fantastic. Except, they made the tournament finally.
And they won there.
Yeah.
But
honestly, look at Northwestern, how difficult it has been for Chris Collins, who I think most people in the industry think he's a really good coach. Mm-hmm. But, like, to build something there and to pull yourself out of the bottom of the league and put yourself in the middle consistently.
Right.
It's a tough challenge.
I think that there's a larger conversation to be had about. It reminds me a little bit that we've talked about over and over again with football is, you know, in the 90s, things got a little bit harder for Nebraska after Tom Osborne retired because a lot of teams in the Big 12 started to care. K-State began to actually care about football. You know, a lot of those, you know, Texas schools, Oklahoma schools started to really care, put more money into it, hired better coaches, like whatever. Nebraska is almost in a certain point with basketball right now. They're still one of the least funded teams in the Big Ten.
Are they really?
Yeah. Hmm. They're still Tim Miles' salary is currently 8th, it's about $500,000 less in $500,000 less than the average coach in the Big Ten gets paid. Hmm. And that doesn't include Chris Holtman's like $7 million he's getting this year from the buyout.
Right,
he's getting paid like 3.2 or something.
He's very good.
But there's been, you know, pretty well documented that Nebraska's not put a ton of money and resources into the basketball program. And that's even with the addition of Pinnacle Bank Arena and facilities. Like Nebraska's done a lot in the past 5 to 6 years to kind of help the basketball program. But the thing is you got to look around and everyone else is doing the exact same thing.
Yeah, that's
I think Nebraska has really great facilities. I think Pinnacle Bank Arena is one of the best places to play in college basketball in the Big Ten. But you're still competing with teams that are constantly updating and facilities are just as good as Nebraska's
and they probably care more. Yeah.
And are putting millions of dollars more into the basketball program than Nebraska is. And so that's a larger conversation to be had, but what to your point of like how do you build
it's so hard.
You have to make a priority you know, and I think that the fan base is there for that, and I feel like Tim Miles tried to do that, and I feel like, you know, going to the Pinnacle Bank Arena was a good step, but like this is an interesting point for Bill Moos because, you know,
I do think there needs to be some sort of definition of what you want to be, and maybe you don't make it, maybe you don't have to do that in the public realm, although I think that might be healthy for this fan base too, for a lot of fans to just sort of like, hey, this is what we want to be. Because again, I don't think that I'm not as plugged in as you, obviously. I don't interact with Nebraska basketball fans as consistently, but I just from monitoring, like, I don't know if people understand that I'm looking at the Big Ten standings right now and like Michigan, Purdue, Michigan State, Wisconsin, Indiana, those teams are Maryland, those teams are like every year NCAA tournament teams.
Mm-hmm.
And Iowa, Minnesota, Illinois, they aspire to be there. And they have proven in their past that they can sort of be at that level. That's like 8 teams.
Here's the thing.
You're competing for 9th now.
Here's the question. And this is to your point.
That's hard.
This is to your point. who should Nebraska's peer in the Big Ten be?
Yeah. Like who do should, you yeah, who do you want to be?
You know who they should probably try and be? Iowa.
Right.
Be Iowa. Where you go to the NCAA tournament every couple years.
Yeah, like every other year or something like that.
You're a 5-9 seed. You're usually pretty good. You're somewhere in the middle.
That seems reasonable.
Because you're not going to be Wisconsin.
Right.
You're not going to be Maryland, probably. You're not going to be Michigan or Purdue.
Or Indiana.
Or Indiana.
Or probably even Ohio State.
You should, Nebraska should be Iowa or Minnesota. And that's a weird thing for Nebraska fans, I think, to kind of
understand. Well,
because
you're basically saying, like, okay, can we be 8th in the Big Ten or 7th?
Right.
That's what we want to be.
And this
but
is...
but the, here's the other thing, though. If you're 7th in the Big Ten on a normal year, that gets you in the NCAA tournament.
Right.
So,
right.
And then so, maybe something magical can happen. You never know.
And here's the thing that you sympathize with the Nebraska fans for is like, this doesn't matter to them. They want to go to NCAA tournament and win a damn game. That's all they want. Right. And so they're like, I don't care. Just take me. We could finish last in the Big Ten, win the tournament, like win the Big Ten tournament, go to the tournament and win. And then I'm fine. Like yeah. they just, and
maybe
they, and,
that's it. It's like how to just whatever you do, that's just the method. Like the plan is get to the NCAA tournament, win a game.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how. Doesn't matter if you finish 3rd in the Big Ten or 10th.
And I think the reason why fans are so upset is like Tim got them there the second year. So expectations were through the roof. And then I think a lot of fans thought this is going to be the guy. This is going to be the guy that's going to get us there year after year. He's going to be there. I mean, there were rumors that he was going to take the Kentucky job. Like that's a real thing. And so I think the fact that this has happened in Nebraska basketball and they've fallen this season in particular with expectations, that's why fans are like, doesn't matter. That's why fans are like, hockey program. Because they've just been hurt over and over again. I'm like, that sucks.
Yeah.
That really sucks. Sorry, we kind of went a long time for Nebraska, but
that's all right.
It's just like drama.com city, man. Like, it's crazy.
And it could get worse.
Yeah.
Tim Miles had the quote, it was after Maryland, right, that he hopes that it's rock bottom. And
I hope to God it's rock bottom.
Right.
That was, I texted Dirk that night, and like, I hope people don't get mad at me for this, but like, there was so much to write about from that one game that there are a lot of gamers, like, you know, we cover 35 games a year or whatever, and sometimes you don't really know what to write about. And I texted Dirk, and I was like, I have 16,000 things. Yeah. Like, I could write a 12,000-word game story right now. And, like, because it was so sad.
Yeah.
And you had...
That's just what I feel.
There was so much that happened.
I don't remember where this was on Twitter, but there was... Or what game it was, but there was this shot of Glenn Watson just dejected on the bench. His shoulders were slumped, and he just had his head down. Like, I am trying so hard, and it's just not working.
I know.
And what can I do? And you're right. It is. It just feels sad.
Yeah, it does. Because Glenn's a guy that, like, you know, you can get mad at him because he's not as vocal of a leader, or you can get mad at him for, you know, not shooting well recently. But like, he's a guy that didn't leave.
And
he's
a guy he you clearly said, cares.
Clearly cares, and a guy that believed in Tim Miles and like. The part of this, and we talked about this on the podcast too, is like it's starting to become sad.
Yeah.
Where all of these guys, I mean, James Palmer and Isaac Copeland. Think about Isaac Copeland.
Right,
he came here from Georgetown. He was going to be the guy, and he was for a long time. And then he, you know, tears his ACL on a, you know, going up for a dunk after a play. James Palmer obviously is not like purposefully not shooting well. He's trying. Glenn Watson, Isaiah Roby, Thomas Allen, like all these guys like are trying so hard. And you've got Tim, who has done so much to try and lift up this program, and nothing's
it's
working.
It's not working. Yeah.
It's a fascinating and pretty sad tale. And I sympathize with Nebraska fans because this would be hard to watch. But at the same time,
because Nebraska fans are telling you, like, Chris, dude, this is a yearly thing. So
right.
I don't know.
Right.
Like, they're like, hey, man, this happens every single year.
I'll just say they got three games coming up. If they're going to break the streak, it could happen sooner than later.
All right, we'll end the podcast like we do.
Yeah,
always.
Yeah.
Nebraska and Creighton, if they were to play today,
yeah,
who wins that game? Again, they are combined 5-16 in 2019.
Yeah, I'd probably go with Creighton.
I think I'd pick Creighton.
I think Creighton by like 5.
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. I would say Creighton would win, but. It'd probably be ugly.
And... Oh, it would be the worst possible basketball game. I mean, it would be.
Although, like we said before, maybe both of these teams need like a game.
A second game.
Yeah. They need to just schedule right now.
Yeah.
A middle of the week game to play each other so they can kind of get the emotions rolling again.
They can get in a fight and then like just get ready to go for conference play. Yeah. Oh, that'd be great. Like, you know how SEC football schools schedule like, you know,
oh yeah, like the like cupcake in the middle of it.
Like mm-hmm. Right before the like final rivalry game. That's what Nebraska Creighton's got to do.
Yeah, maybe they could just, it's an exhibition. Just don't even tell anybody. Just go meet up at like
Baxter Arena or like the
right?
Y.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After Mike Dom and South Dakota State plays UNO on Thursday, the Nebraska and Creighton.
It's like a tournament game, and they're like waiting on the sidelines right. with balls, yeah. like ready to warm up.
Shooting
right
in between timeouts or something on rims.
That'd
yeah.
be great.
Just to get that swagger back. It seems like both teams are missing that. But.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully next week when we record again, if it's next week or week, I'm not sure. Kind of depends on our schedules. Hopefully we'll have more positive things to talk about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, sure, we'll have something to talk about.
There's always something.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Chris.